Welcome to the Front Stretch Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Albino. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Mike Neff. And Neff, it's time to talk about a lot of short track racing. We also got Tyler Ankrum's coming up later in the show to preview the Truck Series playoffs. So make sure to stick around as we also give our predictions for the truck postseason as that starts this week, Thursday, at Bristol Motor Speedway. Neff, we got to start off with the cup race, though, at Richmond, I feel like. Second race of the playoffs. Lots of mixed reviews on social media from what I saw of the race. Some people loved it. Some people really hated it. There was really no middle ground. But overall, what did you think of the race?
I thought it was a fantastic race. As soon as I saw people bagging on it, saying they hated it, I'm like, those are all your people that say they don't watch racing for wrecks, and That's exactly why they watch racing. Because it was amazingly clean racing, but I mean, it's as close as we've been to Old Richmond in probably 10 years. Ever since they went to that dual zone tire thing that they tried at Richmond, they just never kind of recaptured it. But I felt like this was about as close as we've been, because we had literally you'd have cars run side by side for 10 or 15 laps trying to get a pass to go through. And that's the way Richmond always used to be that way. But we got away from it. It was really cool to see it was back, so I loved it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I liked it, too. It was an enjoyable race, I thought. I thought, really, pretty much the whole weekend was enjoyable. And all four races were, honestly, pretty much the same. Three of the four went caution-free in the final stage, which is the longest stage, except for Saturday's Xfinity race. But this was typical Richmond, in my opinion, from what we've seen the past 4 or 5 years. I know you mentioned, you know, kind of like the old Richmond where it was hard to pass cars, or it took a while, I should say, to pass cars. I wouldn't say it was hard. But like I said, no cautions except for the two stage breaks and the competition cautions. No cautions at all besides that, which was the same amount of cautions as the 2018 fall race. And like you said, I think races like this, clean races, get a bad rap, unfortunately. And this had tire wear. We love tire wear, managing your tires. It had everything. It had long green flag runs. But I also enjoyed it. You saw surprises, but you also saw some guys that, you know, dominated with the 750 horsepower package dominate more with Brad Keselowski.
Yeah, and the cool thing I thought was you literally, and I wonder how it would have played out if he hadn't shown his hand, but Kevin Harvick shows the hand early of doing two stop versus one or one. Now I'm going to forget which way it was. He did one stop.
No, he did two stops.
No, he did two stop. Everybody else was doing one. And he smoked them. And it was like all of a sudden all the crew chiefs got the calculators going and decided to switch up. So it literally changed how everybody was running the race during the race, which I thought was just really cool. But you still had a couple guys try to hang on to that strategy. And it almost paid out for them. But again, we didn't get any cautions. And that's the only thing that I say negatively about the whole thing, and it wasn't specific to the race, is they try to tell us how hard these cars are to drive with low downforce, and yet not a single car spins out. And I have a hard time buying that they're that hard to drive if nobody's spinning out, unless we're not pushing it hard enough. But again, I love changes in strategies. I love multiple strategies. I mean, like, Letard even mentioned that at one point early on in the race, and he's like, there's like seven different strategies going on in one of the Xfinity races. Like, he's like, you can't even explain it all because there's so much going. So, yeah, I loved it. I got no complaints other than I'd like to see somebody spin out from trying too hard just once.
Yeah, for sure. I think the only real damage in the race was from James Davison, who was his first time being at the track, obviously. His first year in NASCAR running part-time, he scraped the wall. If you're a fan that claims you don't like wrecks, but then only watch racing for the wrecks, like you said earlier, this wasn't your cup of tea. But if you like racing just from pure racing and the competition standpoint, I feel like this was your race, because as you mentioned with the strategy, Harvick did show their hand maybe a little early. And we've seen, you know, this was my first time not being at Richmond since 2016. And I want to say it was the first race I ever went there. It was spring of 17. I think it was Ricky Stenhouse Jr. He was running like fourth. He had a really good car, and he got off strategy, did the two-stop strategy in stage two, and, you know, you go two laps down at least there, depending on how far you are away from the leader, you go almost three, and he got all of his laps back, and he had a good run. And so this strategy, the concept of two pitting twice over the second and third state, it's not foreign. But, yeah, it forced the guy's hands, other drivers that didn't do it, because Harvick, he had a pit road, you know, the commitment line violation in stage two, and he still got back to 10th and on the lead lap. If he didn't get that commitment line violation, he would have won the stage easily.
I think so. I agree with you. I thought their strategy was the right strategy and forced everybody else's hands. And unfortunately for him, just the way it played out, Keselowski was just stronger at the second half of the race.
Yeah, definitely forced their hands, so much so that I tweeted out in the final stage that, like, the more risky call is to do it on one stop. Because both those guys, Kurt Busch and Matt Kenseth, both finished a lap down. They finished, 13th and 16th respectively for Chip Ganassi Racing. But, yeah, it was an interesting race for sure. But as I mentioned, Brad Keselowski got the victory. His third win this season on a 750 track. Fourth for Team Penske because Joey Logano won at Phoenix earlier this year. He's also undefeated in this car, Neff, when he dominated the New Hampshire race just last month. He ran well in the spring at Phoenix, even while getting in an early incident with, I think, Denny Hamlin, Ryan Blaney, there's a few of them. If he gets to Phoenix, it might be a cause for concern for Hamlin and Harvick when all the talk's around them.
Absolutely. The way he's running in this specific car seems to be strong. And that was why he even said he didn't do a burnout at the end of the race. So he didn't want to hurt it because he wants him to turn this car around for Phoenix. So I'm with you. If he can manage to make it to the final four, the two car is definitely going to be one that's going to be solidly considered for a championship.
Yeah, and I don't think he's ever won at Phoenix, but you've only, you know, with this format since 2014, you've only got to be good for one race. And he's been close before. This car, though, is dominant. And it's the same tire compound that ran at New Hampshire that'll run at Phoenix as well. So whatever it is about this car, this package, and this tire compound, the two team, Jeremy Bowens and Brad Keselowski, has it figured out. And it'll be scary, I think, for Hamlin and Harvick and whomever else makes it to the final four, should they make it to the final four with Keselowski.
Yeah, they better watch out. If anything, they ought to be hoping that something happens to him in the round of eight so he doesn't make it to the final four, because he will be a force to be reckoned with for sure.
And that's the thing, too. Like, we've seen over the last couple of years enough, a lot of kind of fluky things, I guess you could call it, happen to Keselowski in the playoffs. Under this format, he's only made it to the championship four once, which was 2017. And that was a year where they probably didn't have the speed to make it to the final four, but yet, you know, executed at the right times and got there. So I personally think, like, Keselowski's so under the radar this year. He's having his statistically one of his best years. He's got four wins now. His best career average finish up to this point anyway, bettering his 2012 championship winning season. I picked him to go to the final four. I don't believe you did, but I don't get why he's so sneaky. And that's kind of the way he's been his whole career, though, just under the radar and then, you know, gets four victories in a year.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because he's far from demure. I mean, he's one of the more outspoken guys in the garage when it comes to voicing his opinion. So it is kind of interesting that you don't really consider him to be, like, out there and in front of everybody when it comes to running for the championship, yet he's always at least somewhere in the mix, although, like you said, he's had some misfortune the last few years that have kept him out of the finals. But yeah, they seem to be clicking at the right time here, and if they can ride this wave of momentum, they could be that hot hand that goes through to the championship.
And really, I don't want to say all of Penske, because we're going to talk about kind of the other side of that in a little bit. But
the have-nots.
Keselowski and Logano. Logano, you know, he had a rough summer, but since, I believe it was New Hampshire or maybe a few races before that, he's got 9 top 10s in the last 10 events. So he's starting to come around too and getting hot when it counts, similar to 2 years ago when he won the championship. So, you know, a lot of people might not classify Logano as a championship front runner. I think you'd kind of be mistaken if you did that, but I would say he's in the top 5 or 6 candidates to win the championship this year. And I know a lot of people have gotten him to the final four, And another top five run this past Saturday at Richmond.
Yeah, he's. I mean, Richmond's been a strong track for him, though.
True.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know why that is, but it seems to fit him really well, and so you kind of expect him to run pretty well there, and he did. So now we head off to Bristol, which is another track where he runs a when he's good, he tends to run a unique line that's a little different from everybody else, and we'll probably see pretty early on in the race if they've got it where the, where he wants it to be and if he starts running that line. But he's going to be one we got to watch out for sure.
Yeah, flashback to earlier this year in the May race, or maybe it was June, at Bristol. And Logano probably should have, definitely could have won until Chase Elliott kind of took him out there at the end. So, yeah, like you said, if he finds his rhythm, he could win this weekend for sure. But really no shock in the top three at Richmond. Obviously, Martin Truex Jr. finished runner-up. Probably, arguably, his best track on the circuit. He led 970 laps going into this race. Yeah, he led zero, obviously, this weekend. But in six out of the seven races combined before this at Richmond. But, Neff, fourth place was Austin Dillon. And I feel like we got to spend some time talking about that three team. Because if you would have told me going into Darlington that he'd have consecutive top five finishes for the first time in his career to kick off the playoffs, I would have called you crazy.
I agree. Nobody saw this coming, and I give him credit. I mean, we've talked about it all year long that RCR is better than they've been for a while, mm-hmm. and I mean, I think Tyler Reddick finding speed and pushing that organization has been part of it, but I also feel like they've just really kind of they've got their house in order. And they've made some good strategy calls, and he's been driving well. And for whatever reason, they dropped the green at Richmond, and within a couple laps, he was on the radio telling them how fast he was,
yeah.
And the spotter was backing him up. So it is absolutely the surprise of the playoffs, but I think it's also one that we're going to have to watch, because if Austin Dillon turns around and wins this whole thing, that could be a real shocker that nobody saw coming.
Definitely. And let's not get ahead of ourselves, because I think the odds...
Let's get ahead of ourselves. Hot take Mondays are always good.
For sure. I think the odds of that happen are, I don't want to say slim to none, because he is a proven champion. I mean, let's face it, he's won a championship in trucks and Xfinity for RCR. But when it comes to the Cup Series, Childress has been out to lunch really since Harvick left in 2013. Like, if we're being honest, that's how long it's been. I know Newman got to the championship 4 and 14, but that was just kind of being smart, kind of cheating the system and making it to the final four and finishing second, almost winning the title. Then would have broke the system in the first year had he done that. So, but on Saturday, Dillon led 55 laps, which is a career high, and he had a pit road penalty too, and then he missed pit road. And during the second stage, he had the pit road penalty at the end of the first. He got all the way up to, I believe, second, because he scored 18 stage points. Huge, big 18 stage points for him. That's just impressive driving.
I agree. He was hot coming out. Excuse me. Frog in my throat. He was hot coming into the race off of Darlington. They had that momentum. And then he turns around and immediately rolled off the truck strong. And I think that was the part that's kind of been a thing for them, is that they haven't been really strong coming off the truck most of this year. So he's had some decent runs, but he's been so far behind by the time they got the car dialed in that he wasn't capitalizing on them and getting the really strong finishes that he probably deserved. And I feel like lately they've been unloading faster, and I think that's been the real difference for him once the playoffs have gotten here.
Yeah, and if you would have told me two straight top fives to kick off the playoffs for the three team, I would have called you crazy. But he's got four top fives now for the year, which ties a career high. And like you said, there has been times this year where he just doesn't have the speed, but then there's other races where he's very competitive. And Tyler Reddick, too, like you mentioned. Like for the majority of the year, I would say Reddick was the better driver, had the more speed this year, but But not lately. And I get that Reddick's a rookie still, obviously, and he's going to a lot of these tracks still for the first time, Richmond included. I guess that'll change in the next, you know, coming up for the rest of the year. But, yeah, it's I guess, kind of enlightening to see Dylan, a new guy up there, and Richard Childress Racing. And we got to remember, just a few races ago, Dylan was sidelined, and there was so much talk of Kaz Grala coming in and, you know, getting a top 10 in his first race, impressing the hell out of everybody. But now Dylan's in a real shot to get to the...
It's refreshing, just RCR in general.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of those things you always hear people talk about, things like NASCAR's better when the 43 is competitive.
Mm-hmm.
NASCAR's better when the 3 is competitive, too. I mean, you get people that will dig at him and harp on him about being, you know, a spoiled rich kid that got a ride because it's his grandpa's team. Yeah. So, if it was my grandpa's team, I'd want the damn ride, too. So I don't have a problem with it, and he's won and earned his way up to it. I mean, don't forget, he's won a championship in trucks and in Xfinity. So if by some miracle, and it would still be a miracle no matter how good they're running right now.
Definitely this year.
He won the championship, he would be the first guy to ever do that. And if you're the first guy to ever do something on the positive side of anything, then people can say whatever they want. So, I mean, I still think it's a ridiculous long shot, simply because he still doesn't have that many playoff points. So one bad misstep race could wipe them out of this thing. And that's the real pressure of this. So, it'd be awesome to see them hit on all cylinders all the way through and have a shot at Phoenix. It's going to be really hard just to maintain that level through 9 races to get there. But if they do it, you'd absolutely have to consider him a championship contender if he makes the final four, because they all are. But it would be a story, to say the least, going into Phoenix.
And I got to try to figure out how to phrase this, but he's 36 points up right now on the cutoff. I think he's a near lock. And I get that it's Bristol. Anything can happen. He could be taken out on lap 5, get 1 point, and then miss the playoffs, miss the round, you know, round of 12. I don't see that happening, but, you know, anything's possible. Definitely at Bristol with a cutoff race. I'm so pumped about Bristol being a cutoff race, by the way. But if he does happen to get through, which I think it's highly likely, you know, a very good percentage he's going to get past, the next round you got Vegas, which RCR's proven to be solid on intermediate tracks this year, especially Reddick. You got Talladega, which Dylan could win. He's a very good super speed racer. And then you got the Rolva, which is kind of a crapshoot. If he gets through the round of 8, though, then you got round of 12 into the round of 8. Then you got what? You got Texas, Kansas.
Kansas, Texas, Martinsville.
Texas he won at.
Like you said, they're good on intermediate tracks. Austin has always been good on intermediate tracks.
Yep.
So they've got speed. He's good on the tracks. You never know what might happen. But I would hope if he's getting there, I hope he gets himself in a solid point position, because he's never really done great at Martinsville. So that's where I kind of feel like that could be their Achilles heel.
But it's funny, because he admitted in the post-race Zoom conference that he hasn't been good at Martinsville, but he really looks forward to going there. And similarly, he used to hate going to Richmond. It used to be, he said it was worst track, he hated the track, least favorite track on the schedule. Now it's his favorite, and he boiled it down to and pointed the finger at a test session they had, similar to what they had at Charlotte years back, and now it's his favorite when they go there. And he's run, that's 3 top 6 finishes in the last 4 races at Richmond that he's had, so he's a very underrated driver. I think he gets a lot of flack that's really not deserved at all, and like you mentioned, the Silver Spoon comments, just gets discredited, and it's really not fair to him, but I guess life isn't fair either. So, you know, Dale Jr. said, I think it was post-race, maybe towards the end of the race, when do we start taking this 3-team seriously? I think you got to start taking them seriously now.
I agree. I think they've proven right after these first 2 races that they're in a position. I mean, again, overreaction Monday, as we like to call it, anytime that something happens in a short sample set and you start making bold predictions. But this sport is all about momentum, and they have got momentum on their side, and if they can keep riding that momentum, there's no limit to where they could end up.
And he's never lacked confidence either. So, so and neither has RCR as a whole, obviously with Dale Earnhardt prior to, you know, years ago. So on the flip side, Neff, we got to talk about the negatives, not with RCR, not with Dylan, but
and
with
you called it.
With Matt DiBenedetto and Team Penske, and with Ryan Blaney, I should say, with Team Penske.
Yeah, that was the one you called going into this weekend. You emphasized that point that Blaney was not good at Richmond.
Right, yeah, he had an average finish of, I believe it was 25.5 going to the weekend. He bettered that by a position because he had an 18th place finish on Saturday night. He mentioned post-race how hard they worked on it, and then it you can go to a simulator, and we've talked about sim racing way more than we should have this year. You know, wait, months back, it seems like years back. But you can go to a simulator, and you can put a test session on and put laps down. But ultimately, if you don't have a feel for the racetrack, I don't know. There's some drivers that just struggle at some tracks, and this is Blaney's kryptonite, is Richmond.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen it. I mean, even Jimmy Johnson and Jeff Gordon used to struggle at Martinsville when they first got there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a matter of eventually a switch will go on, and for some people it never does. So we will find out. But, yeah, it was blatantly obvious this weekend that it was not Blaney's favorite track. I mean, they struggled from the drop of the green, and DiBenedetto wasn't far behind. So, unfortunately for those two, there's a lot of pressure on them to get past this next race and make it to the round of 12 because the points are not in their favor, and anything can happen at Bristol, as you've said.
Yeah, I think we got to kind of lump these guys together because you got essentially two Penske drivers with the Wood Brothers, you know, prepared by Penske, that 21 car. But let's start with Blaney since we kind of talked about him a little bit. He's 27 points out going into Bristol. Terrible race this weekend. Terrible playoff so far. He's really got to be missing those 10 points from the pre-race penalty at Darlington last week. If he didn't have that, he'd be 17 out. That's more manageable than 27. If you have two good stages, then essentially you'd be in at that point if you win both stages, which, let's face it, Blaney's really good at Bristol. So if you're in a must-win situation, which I believe Blaney is, there's few drivers I'd put ahead of him. I know he hasn't won there before, but there's few drivers in the field that I'd put ahead of him to go out and say, you got to win, go win. And then you're into the next round. So he can do it. He hasn't had a moment like this before, though, so we'll find out if he's capable of it.
Yeah, I still don't know if I'm calling him must win yet. But it's really close. Let's be honest. Like you said, 27 points is a bunch.
But
you're chasing two rookies and Clint Bowyer.
Mm-hmm.
So there's three of them that could easily fall below you on their own volition without being taken out by somebody else's stuff. Although we have seen Byron run pretty well at Bristol.
It's just you got to pass four guys in points. That's tough.
Yeah, that's obviously the hard part. But at the same time, if a couple guys have a bad run, then it gets manageable because, like I said, you have two good stages. If he runs top two or three in the first two stages, then it becomes a manageable event. If he's not top two or three in the first two stages, then yes, it's a must win. But I think as long as he's running right at the front, I think he can chip away somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 points off of that deficit, and then it becomes reasonable. But it's all we're going to know really quickly. I mean, 10 laps in to the race this week, we will know if it's must win or not.
Yeah. And like you mentioned, he's chasing Clint Bowyer, who's on the bubble right now, William Byron Custer, who's obviously only got one cup start at the track and the All-Star race. He could pass to Benedetto on points pretty easily since he's only two behind. But he is really good at Bristol. Earlier this year, he led 60 laps there and then got wrecked out. He spun on his own while running second and got clobbered by Ty Dillon. He's led in three of the past five races, they're over 100 laps. His best finish, though, is fourth. So I don't know. I don't think that gets it done. I truly think he's in a must-win scenario because, you know, as much as, you know, maybe you can't trust Bowyer or the other guys, you still got to pass four of them on points. And that's hard to do in one race.
Oh, yeah.
So I think you got it. Him and Todd Gordon have to go in preparing that this is a must win.
We're going to find out. Like I said, I'm not ready to call it must win for those two yet, but it's really close. It's must, I guess we'd say must show in the first two stages. Don't have to win or place, but you've got to show in the first two stages if you're going to be out of the must win category.
Yeah, and I had Blaney going to the round of eight. So I would say this is a surprise, but as we've seen with Blaney, there's times in his career where it just seems like nothing goes right. And you think of all the points, the playoff points that have gotten away this year. Martinsville, he finished second. Homestead, he was leading late, fell to third. You think of Vegas earlier in the year, he was leading until a caution came out. And then Todd Gordon had him pit. Texas, he dominated at 150 laps and ultimately finished seventh. There's so many races that they've kind of let slip away this year. In your opinion, Neff, if he doesn't make it the round of 12, it seems like a wasted season.
Oh, yeah. I think if you're in that organization, you at least have to be in a round of eight, at least, or you consider it a lost year. In reality, they all feel like they should be in the final four there, but that's just math kind of works against you on that one. But if you're in that organization and you're not in that final eight, I think it's considered a wasted season.
Definitely. And I think on top of that, we got to throw into Benedetto now and talk about him a little bit. Another poor performance for them. They struggled with their car all night until the end. And while it was the best at the end, he was two laps down in 17th. And that's six straight finishes outside the top 10. We've talked ad nauseum over the past, I don't know, month or so of how much struggles this team's had over the past, really, I would say 2 months at least, because they almost gave up a three-digit deficit to get into the playoffs. I think for DeBenedetto, it is a must-win, because I personally don't see him going up there and winning stages, or he hasn't won one all year, or finishing second or third. Maybe I'm wrong, but Bristol is his best track.
Say that it's must win for him, not necessarily for a points perspective, although it's really close to that, but for a confidence perspective. Because I feel like, and we talked about this off air in rehashing races the last couple of races, that it seems like that team got into a conservative mode and was trying to survive to get into the playoffs.
Playing defense.
And once they got there, they haven't been able to flip the switch and go back to offense. And I really feel like they need a race where they're in the mix and there's at least a shot at him winning for them to get that confidence back and ultimately to get on to the next round. So he's, like I said, I'm not totally calling it must win, but it's really darn close.
Yeah, and let's not forget the last Bristol night race just last year. I was there. He probably should have won that race. He made contact late with Ryan Newman and bent in the right front fender, and then Denny Hamlin chased him down and got by him with, I think it was 12 or 13 laps to go. DeBenedetto finished second. Very emotional after the race. He's got a sixth place finish there for BK Racing, so he can wheel a car around that place.
Say that again out loud.
Yeah, sixth place finish for BK Racing. At Bristol. So
that gives you an idea of how decent he is at Bristol.
Yeah, a little bit of perspective there. I'm not going to say he can't win, but I don't see it happening. And I think I foresee him having to win in order to make the next round. Regardless, Neff, as we talked about, Boyer's on the bubble. He's 3 points ahead of William Byron, 8 points ahead of Cole Custer. Now you got Kyle Busch, 18 to the good. Almirola and Kurt Busch, both 7. You could even go up to Bowman, who's, 27 above, Chase Elliott, 28 above. If you have an early incident at Bristol and score 1 point or, only a couple points, there's a good chance you miss it. So how do you kind of see this shaping up? And I know I kind of put you on the spot, but it's also Bristol, where kind of unpredictable. There are 17 cautions there in the spring.
Right. Yeah, it's part of me wants to think it'll be chalk because so many times. It's chalking these things. Like, if you're not in the top 12 going into this race, you don't get in the top 12. But just the unpredictability of this race, I think, adds to that. And I know I give him grief about all the time, but it's Bowyer. Invariably, something happens. Tire flies off. Asteroid hits his car. Who knows? Just something goofy seems to hit that team. And that's why I got no scientific logic to it, but I just feel like something will happen to them that takes them out. The crazy thing, and again, no scientific basis for it whatsoever, but I get this feeling of Almirola and Bowyer both having some kind of a problem and both getting knocked out. And if that's the case, you would then have Stuart Haas going from 4 to 1, assuming Custer doesn't get up there into the mix. So that would be a catastrophic night for the SHR guys, and I would never wish that on anybody. But that's kind of where I've got that feeling. I'm with you. I think it's one of those two, Matty D or Ryan, is not going to make it, but I feel like the other one's going to in just one of those off-talked-about, beaten-to-death moments all night long at this race that we're gonna hear about it. But that's where I'm coming. I'm like, SHR has a horrendous night. You lose Almirola, Bowyer, and Custer, and one of the two Penske or Penske-affiliated cars.
So I do think it stays chalk. Byron's kind of struggled with the 750 package. Again, I get that it's Bristol. Anything can happen. Custer's a rookie. He's been good at Bristol and Xfinity at times. We'll see if that plays dividends. De Benedetto Blaney, as we mentioned, I think could both potentially win. More so Blaney, but I don't foresee it happening. The one guy that I'm worried about, and again, this could all change on lap 10 if there's a huge incident or something, but I get that Alex Bowman's 30 points to the good. But that 88 team, and they've got 4 straight top 10s. You can't take that away. It's a career-long streak for him. But their summer months were bad for Hendrick Motorsports standards. So, again, I wouldn't wish he lose 30 points. I don't wish that on anybody. But if there's anyone, Kyle Busch he could drive a boat around Bristol. As could Kurt Busch. And Bowyer's a good short track racer. Finished second at Bristol in the spring. I think it stays the same, though. I really do.
We'll see. That's why we watch the races.
Absolutely. Like I said, I can't wait for this cutoff race. The cutoff races here are so good with Bristol, the Roval, Martinsville. And then you got the championship race at Phoenix.
I'm so thankful we don't have Talladega as a cutoff race.
Yeah. It's only a couple weeks away, though. Playoffs.
As long as it's not the cutoff race, I'm okay.
Neff, any, I guess, final words about Richmond before we kind of get into other topics off the track or more about the points?
No. I mean, I love the race. I mean, I want more. Can we knock the dang splitter off these cars and get rid of the spoiler or make it 2 inches tall and let them run like this all the time instead of just at short tracks?
And you could actually, like I saw Matt Weaver put out a tweet on Saturday night where Austin Dillon got by Kevin Harvick for the lead, and he got right up next to him, like right behind him. I'm kind of making motions with my hands here. You couldn't do that last year with the package. You couldn't do that at all. So that's a positive. And the 750 races, New Hampshire, I thought was entertaining. Phoenix this year was really good. Dover was Dover, but you can't really gauge Dover compared to the other ones. And I thought this race too was really good. So I guess take that, fans that claim you want that you like racing and don't watch for the wrecks. But now you're all bitching. So you can't have both, Neff.
Nope. Can't keep them all happy.
Moving on. Big news last week. Bubba Wallace and Richard Petty Motorsports announced that they will no longer be partnering. They're going their separate ways for the 2021 season. I got to be honest, I'm a little surprised by this, but not too much. How surprised are you?
I'm not sure. And I don't blame him, depending on where he ends up, and assuming that he ends up in a more competitive ride, partly because of the fact that he's bringing a lot of money to this deal. So I'm assuming that's why he's going to potentially end up in a more competitive ride. But part of me is a little disappointed. And I say that just because Richard Petty Motorsports and Richard Petty himself were so behind Bubba through all the crap that went down this year. And they were so supportive and loyal to him. It kind of makes me sad that he's going to move on. I understand it from a career and a business perspective, but just from a loyalty perspective, it would have been nice for him to instead come out and say, you know, I've got some opportunities to go elsewhere, but RPM and especially Richard have been so good to me, I'm going to stay here. I would have rather seen that, but I don't blame him.
Yeah, so I definitely see where you're coming from. And also, RPM gave him his first shot in Cup. When Eric Almirola right. got hurt in 2017, when he broke his back, they called on Bubba for a few races. So, it's tough because I think Bubba, I mean, he loves that team. It's a family atmosphere. I talked to him a little over a month ago prior to the Michigan doubleheader, and he mentioned that, you know, there's two things that will get him to stay, and one of them is the family atmosphere, and the second one is competitive cars. And there's no doubt about it. This year, compared to the past two, his first two full-time seasons, that 43 team's got a lot better. So it is a little heartbreaking for them, for RPM, for him to see him go. Because, I mean, what happens to RPM now? There's so many moving targets out there, and there's so many rumors that you hear. And for Bubba, like you said, he's got all this funding now, which he didn't have at all, ever through his career.
Right.
And
which I've never understood, and we've had that discussion here many times too. I've always thought he's one of the most marketable personalities in the whole sport. So I'm glad the rest of the non-NASCAR world is waking up and bringing some money to it. But it's been a long time coming.
And it's kind of disappointing that it had to take him standing up for what he believes in too for that to happen. But at least he's got the funding to go wherever he wants now. Originally, when you knew he was a free agent, I didn't think there was any chance he'd come back. But the longer it waited, and sources have told me he had an offer on the table from Ganassi, but then they kind of picked it up because the deadline went by. I don't know where he goes. There was rumblings of Denny Hamlin buying into an RPM program, Richard Petty's program, moving to Toyota. That seems to not be happening now. That would have been huge for RPM. I don't know. I think Bubba's waiting on whatever Hamlin, and we haven't really discussed this on the podcast, but there's so many, you know, inside sources in the garage talking about Hamlin potentially buying into a team, which essentially, and Steve Phelps mentioned this a couple weeks ago, it's not by the rule book allowed unless it's, if it's a fifth team, essentially, like if it's a fifth JGR team, it wouldn't be allowed. But I think Bubba's waiting to see where that goes, and then the dominoes are going to fall. It's only a matter of time. And I've heard possibly by the end of the week. So we'll have to see. And then I think silly season, the dominoes start to fall. It gets real crazy.
Yeah, I think. And that's the way it usually works. That one to come down, which theoretically one already came down with Jimmy Johnson announcing that he's going IndyCar race.
Which we'll talk about that.
That was one of those where there were still rumblings flying around that he might stick around into 48, even though I never believed it. But that pen to paper in that deal officially knocked that first domino down. And I think that has kind of started the impetus of people start making decisions, start having some things go about.
Yeah, and then you got the 48 obviously open, the 42 with Ganassi, and then Germain Racing, we talked about it 2 weeks ago on the podcast. It kind of sounds like now that Hamlin might be interested in buying into that program. And also there's other, Justin Marks has announced that he's going to start a team. Not saying Bubba would go there, but they're looking for a charter to run the 36 races to be guaranteed in. So there's a lot of moving around here, and it's late. I mean, it's mid-September now, and usually the big, you know, it'd be a month ago when the big stories have happened. And I guess you had Eric Jones and Christopher Bell, and that happened, but the big story here is Bubba and whatever happens, and then everything will kind of circle around it. But
yeah, we got to find out where Corey LaJoie ends up too.
Yeah, that's a fact too. I mean, there's so many moving targets, and then who comes up from Xfinity, who possibly goes back down. There's just so much that we'll have to cover here on the podcast, and I feel like it's going to come in a big chunk here fairly quickly. So
we love content. Y'all keep moving around.
Absolutely. You mentioned Jimmy Johnson, Neff. I want to talk about that. So last week it was announced he'll be running I think all the road course races with Chip Ganassi, which is, I mean, he had the test with Ganassi, what was it, last month now? He was supposed to have it originally in July, the week of the Brickyard, the week after the Brickyard. But obviously, he had COVID, so they had to postpone that. He was also supposed to have another test, not with Ganassi, in, I believe it was April. And then the shutdown, the world shutdown, the country shutdown affected that. So I'm not surprised that he signed with Ganassi. It's probably the best IndyCar team. They definitely have the best driver with Scott Dixon. And you got two of really the...
Wow. You are just anti-Penske tonight, big time.
Oh, okay. You're right. You got Penske. Penske, Ganassi, they're 1-2, but Dixon... I mean, Newgarden and Dixon, they're 1-2 in points, but Dixon is... He's so underrated, in my opinion, personally. And he's one of the best drivers in IndyCar history. So it'll be cool to have those two drivers on the same team.
I agree. I think it's going to be fun to watch. Part of me is just surprised that they went the road course route. Because if I think of Jimmy Johnson and driving ability, road course is pretty far down on the list of things that I think he's good at. So that's where I'm like...
He's gotten better.
But... He's still not great. I mean, if I'm lining up a team to go road course racing in any kind of a vehicle, Jimmy Johnson's name's not near the top of my wish list. So that's where I thought that was kind of odd. But at the same time, you're not going 2-0-30 on road courses. And when you're getting a little long in age and starting to think about retirement in general, you start thinking about the mortality of things a little bit more often, and I'm sure that probably played into it too. But I mean, it's exciting for him. Again, you always like those Cinderella story time things. I would love to see him turn around and have a great run at Indy in the 500 if they can pull that off too. Because I mean, let's face it, it's the Indy 500. That'd be amazing to have Johnson win that,
or just be a part of it would be huge. And it's interesting, obviously. In IndyCar, in NASCAR, Ganassi runs Chevys. In IndyCar, they run Hondas. So that
I've always thought that was odd how that works out.
That ends that relationship with Johnson and Chevy, which he said he had to talk to Chevy execs and tell them, you know, break the news to them, which would also mean that, I mean, if he were to run a NASCAR race, because he's been open, he said he's going to retire from full-time competition, but he's open to running some of the marquee events like your Daytona 500, road courses, short tracks. I would have to be with Ganassi, I would imagine, also because there's going to already be four cars for HMS.
Yeah, that's a true statement, unless he ended up... I don't know. I mean, you're right. It's going to have to be with Ganassi, which then brings him back into the Chevy fold on that side of things.
True.
Assuming Ganassi stays Chevy.
Correct. But,
which would be really odd if they got out of that. but yeah, again, when they're one-off races, some of those agreements can be kind of fudged a little bit, so that'll be different. But I have no doubt it had to be a hard conversation for him to tell the Bowtie folks that he was not going to be running for them anymore, because he's been in that camp for a long time.
Well before his NASCAR days. So,
yeah.
Like his off-road trucking days. I'm happy that he gets to do what he wants. He's earned that right, as we've talked about plenty of times. Do wish he would stay around for another year personally. But obviously that's not going to happen, at least at the cup level. So, I'm interested to see how he does, though. Because like you said, you know, I think early in his career, I know his one road course win came 10 years ago at Sonoma. But I think more recently he's gotten a lot better at road courses. He finished top five this year at the Daytona road course. Granted, he had experience there. Not many other drivers had, at least in top teams. He's gotten a lot better. I mean, let's just 2 years ago at the Roval. He could have, should have, maybe won that race until he...
Yeah, and what happened? He ran out of talent.
I think, yeah. It was more so him trying to get a win for the first time that year. And if we're going to be honest, that's probably the last time he's really been in contention to win a race. I don't...
I think in the race, yeah. Mm-hmm. Race at Darlington this year is in contention,
but sure,
he wrecked himself out of that really early.
So yeah, I guess good for Jimmy that at least he'll be racing something and that he's not going away cold turkey like we see a lot of guys do. So Neff, anything else outside the track before we get back to Xfinity?
Speaking of going away cold turkey, I saw a couple tweets about it, but I never found any like written word about it that has Kenseth said he's officially not coming back next year? I saw some tweets, but I never saw like an article that confirmed it.
Yeah, he went on Sirius XM last Wednesday or Thursday and said there's a good chance he will not be back next year in the 42, which opens that ride, obviously, which I think everyone thought this season has not gone as planned for him or for the 42 team. And yeah, I think they get a younger driver.
Makes sense.
For sure. All right, Neff, talking about Xfinity now. Doubleheader this weekend, the last doubleheader of the season for any NASCAR series. And Justin Allgaier, who was on the podcast a few weeks ago, dominated this weekend.
Laid the smack it down.
He's always good at these flat tracks like your Phoenixes. That's why if he gets to Phoenix, he's going to be really dangerous. Richmond, he's led a ton of laps in the past, but never got the victory until this weekend. He led 78 laps on Friday, a ton more on Saturday, and got 12 playoff points, which are huge for that 7 team because he entered the weekend with 13. So now he has 25, and he sits third on the playoff board. Big weekend for Allgaier.
Yeah, and not only a big weekend for Allgaier, but a terrifying weekend for the rest of the Xfinity series. Guys, but that 7 team is looking like they are really finally getting the monkey off their back and starting to run the way they're supposed to run. And, you know, part of me thinks it honestly was the incident at Daytona. You know? I mean, Allgaier dumps him Allmendinger dumps him, and Allgaier got fired up.
Yeah, you don't see that.
I mean, more than you usually see Allgaier get fired up, because he's one of those guys that he'll run you hard, and he knows stuff happens, and he can usually take it, but he was wound up. And I really feel like that show of emotion that he made kind of ratcheted up the whole team. And it seems like since that event, they've gone to that next level where we know they can be, and they've always been. And you can hear the tone of guys getting interviewed post-race that they are scared shitless about the idea of Allgaier getting to Phoenix, because it could be a battle for second if he ends up at Phoenix, because he is really good there. And if that team is running as well as they're running right now at Phoenix, they will be really hard to beat.
Yeah, he's won 3 of the past 6 races overall this season since that Daytona incident. Obviously, the first race of the Dover doubleheader, and then the second race of the the first race of the doubleheader this weekend, and he burned it down because he didn't get to do a burnout in his first races this year. On Saturday, he had a really good burnout, but it's been a 2-year monkey on the back, really, ever since the regular season finale. 2 years ago in 2018. When he won at Indy, it's been a rough time for that 7 team. So, he's third on the playoff board now. And I guess last time he had this amount of playoff points, he barely made it through the first round, didn't make it to the championship race. So, I mean, anything could happen. He's been bitten by anything. Teammate wrecked him. Yep, that happened. Noah Gragson. He got wrecked out late at Road America. And anything, I wrote about this on Sunday, anything that could happen has happened to that 7 team negatively this year, last 2 years really, and maybe that monkey's finally off the back.
We're going to find out. Like I said, I feel like that whole team to me, just the sense you get of it, is that they have ratcheted up from where they were, and it's not like they weren't running good. I mean, they were in position to win a bunch of races, and a vast array of crap has happened to them, and it just might be that they finally got all of the bad luck out of the bucket, and all they got left is good luck turning their way. And if it is, like I said, I pity the rest of the series, because I feel like if that 7 team gets hot at this point in time, ain't nobody gonna touch them.
Yeah, he'll always tell you that the definition of luck is when opportunity meets preparation, and he's always, it seems like the team's prepared, but it just, whatever happened, like I mentioned, could happen to that team over the past couple of years. And hell, even with a bad year last year, he almost won the championship. Granted, the final race was at Homestead, and that is probably his least, his worst track on the schedule. But now the championship race is at Phoenix, and that's his best track on the schedule. So yeah, I would be concerned if I'm Austin Cindric or Chase Briscoe, who, if we're being honest, Briscoe's the last little bit here, the last couple months, only one win since the 4th of July. Cindric, I'm not worried about Cindric at all. He's still very fast and wrapped up the regular season championship this weekend. But that 98 team's a little concerning. You know, this weekend they were, probably his worst of the year was on Saturday. So, yeah, if Allgaier gets hot, which he is, I'd be a little worried, definitely.
Yeah, I could be. I mean, and I'm with you. I feel like the 98 has, of the two between him and Cindric, I think the 98 has been struggling a little bit more. But at the same time,
he's still fast.
He's still fast. And I mean, you saw him in the second race this weekend. He was much more competitive. That first race, they were bad. And they still had a halfway decent run, even when they were bad. So that's where I'm like, I feel like they're not far from being right back where they were. It's just going to be a matter of, and this weekend is a perfect time for them to cure those ills, too. Because, short track racing is Briscoe's forte as much as anybody's. And a win going into the playoffs would be an ideal scenario for them. And then you end up going back and racing the Roval for the playoffs, the break or the knockout round in the round of 12 in the playoffs. So that'll be a great race for him. So I was shot there, and then we trickle down from that. But like I said, I'm not that concerned for Briscoe performance wise. I'm that concerned for Briscoe because Allgaier's team is really good right now.
Yeah, and if we're being honest, you know, we had Justin Haley on the podcast a couple weeks ago. He was really good this weekend again, too. That was probably the best he's ever been in a race, I think, outside of a super speedway. It was on Friday night when he led 51 laps, which is a career high for him. Ross Chastain's top five in the field of death. If he's got to get a victory sooner rather than later. He's got 22 top tens this year in 25 races.
Speaking of hard racing, Allgaier could have ruined his day on Friday. In that first race, Chastain came up on him on the front stretch, and Allgaier cut him a huge break. If he had wanted to, he could have hooked him into the outside wall so easy, and there'd have been no anger about it. I mean,
those two do not like each other.
He squeezed the crap out of it.
And those two don't like each other. If you remember Watkins Glen from last year, Ross turned Allgaier, and then later in the race, Allgaier intentionally wrecked Chastain. So, and they've always I was listening to Allgaier's radio, and he mentioned something over the radio about the 10 team and the way Ross was driving on, I think it was Saturday. Might have been Friday. Might have been what you're talking about. But yeah, look, colleagues running really well. Brandon Jones is sneaky, as we talked about last week. Yep. So this Xfinity, I know it was the big two, but Allgaier, I think, asserted himself as maybe not co-favorite, but a...
10 points away from making the big three.
A front runner. So, Yeah, we're going to Bristol. We'll make our predictions a little bit, and then we'll talk. You know, we'll break down the Xfinity playoffs. We'll preview them next week. But I want to talk about the truck playoffs in the truck series race, I guess, at Richmond too a little bit. Grant Enfinger got the win. Neff, ThorSport swept the top three spots, which surprisingly, yeah, he finished in the low 20s. But surprisingly, this is the first time a team in the 26 year history of the truck series has ever swept the podium, was on Thursday night.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't ever. But then again, there ain't that many teams that run three trucks. I mean, most of your teams that are even multi teams only have a couple. You got GMS and ThorSport, I think, are the only two now that are doing it.
But like you said,
off the top of my head,
if you're on the good side of history for anything, it's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. First one doing something, and it's a positive thing. That's awesome. So, yeah, that's a really cool stat. I did not realize that.
And I mean, really, they laid it to him. Grant Enfinger had a penalty in that race, too. Came back and he had an unscheduled pit stop, and he came back, and he had contact with Ben Rhodes, caved the fender in, rubbed the tire, had a big tire rub, pitted, went a lap down, came back and won the race. So,
but I think it might have actually helped him in the long run.
It could have.
I honestly think it did, because he got on a different tire strategy, and some guys left tires in the pits that he used up. So I think it ended up helping him out in the long run.
Sure, and it, I mean, that was an impressive run by Enfinger, who last year, and I asked him, you know, to record this on Monday. Today was Truck Series Playoff Media Day. I asked him, like, what's the outlook coming to the playoffs? Because last year you were so consistent. Didn't have the victories, though. He won the regular season championship instead. This year you're not consistent, but have the victories. So it kind of balances out. But let's face it, he had some bad luck in the playoffs last year when all the Ilmor engines blew up on the same lap, three of them for Thor Sport.
That was so crazy.
At Vegas in the what was it, the first or second race of the playoffs. So, yeah, I don't know. Let's get into the playoffs and who we got, because they start this weekend at Bristol. If we recall, it expands to 10 for the first time, which we talked about, I think, in December when it was announced, which is interesting because they go from the round of 10 to the round of 8 to the round of 4, the championship 4.
Yeah, which is just...
You think they would have cut it in half, but...
I think they would have gone to 7, not 8. But
I guess round even numbers are preferred here. But let's get into it now. So tell me who you think are the first two out in this year's Truck Series playoff.
First two out, one of them will be Christian Eckes. I just feel like that team has been way too inconsistent. They haven't, they show flashes and then they run like garbage. And you can't do that in advance in the playoffs. So if we're going to bump two of them out, I'm going with him first. And I hate to do it to him, but Todd Gilliland.
We got the same two.
I mean, Todd got screwed so bad at Gateway, and he's had those moments, but the same thing. He has those moments, but then you get other races where you, like, don't even realize he's running. And I just think you got to be a little bit better. And again, I'm on the anchor from bandwagon. I talked about it last week after Darlington when he went into turn one when he had never been on the track before and took it three wide on the flat and made it work. Was still just one of the craziest things I've ever seen in a race car. So that's why I'm on his side for him to advance. So I'm going to say Eckes and Gilliland are first two out.
So hopefully we don't agree the whole way, but our first two out are the same here. Like you said, Eckes has been inconsistent this year. They probably should have won two or three races. Pocono comes to mind. I was there, and they blew a right rear tire and wrecked out from the lead. They also wrecked out or maybe blew an engine from a lead in a different race. And Gilliland, I think he's overperformed this year. Personally, he made the move from KBM to front row in a startup team. It's essentially another DGR team, Crosley. But, I think he's just getting the playoffs, a win for him. And all of the drivers collectively, unanimously today, said that he's the dark horse in these playoffs. So I think even if he gets out of the round of 10, it's a win for him this year.
I'm with you.
So we agreed there. Hopefully we don't agree here. Maybe we will. I'm sure we will in some. But the round of 8, who do you got? I guess who do you got missing the championship four since there's only 3 rounds in the Xfinity Series? So who's your next 4 out?
All right. I'm going to say Austin Hill. Because, again, they started strong, but I feel like lately they haven't had what it's taken. Brett Moffitt, similarly, because this year has just not been their year. He has some hot runs, but he's not consistent enough. Ben Rhodes, and primarily because I think somebody wrecks him just because he pisses so many people off.
Race is very hard.
And then Ankrum. So that's 4 I think will not make the final 4.
So then that means your final 4 would be Enfinger, Creed, Crafton, and Zane Smith.
Yep.
Got it. We agree on 2 of these. I think Rhodes is also out. I wouldn't say he's overachieved this year, but he's ran better than I think he has. Like, statistically, this is going to be his best year, probably. He's going to have his most top 5s, most top 10, probably career best ever finished by the end of the year. I think Ankrum misses it. He's shown top 5, top 10 speed at times, but hasn't gotten the victory yet. You know, maybe he doesn't get the victory then this year. So I think he's out. I got Enfinger. He's shown a lot of speed this year, but then he's also had, like I mentioned earlier, just a few minutes ago, a lot of inconsistency. And that could come to bite you in only three races. And let's face it, all these 10 drivers that start off are separated by 24 points.
Yeah.
So one bad race and you might be shot out of luck. So for any of these guys, and that starts this weekend in Bristol, obviously. And then Sheldon Creed comes in as the number one overall seed, and he's very fast. He's got a 3 wins this year, but his average finish is kind of worrisome. They're also inconsistent. 13.1, it's the 8th best out of the 10 drivers, and that's worrisome to me because they run fast. Darlington, for instance, should have won the race. You know, pitted late, we talked about last week, had a pit road speeding penalty.
There's a whole lot of dumb on that one.
Finished 18th. So that's worrisome to me. So I think Creed misses it. So my championship four.
Wow, look at you with the hot take.
I think Zane Smith, Austin Hill, Brett Moffitt, and Matt Crafton get into the championship four. And I'll start right here. I think Zane Smith wins the title as a rookie.
Wow, our captain hot take today.
Well, and also too, Neff, like I think realistically, like out of the three series, I think this is the most wide open. I think seven guys.
Could, oh, is it?
I think, but even more so this year by the addition of two playoff guys, like Ankrum comes in as the 9th seed, but I think he could win the championship, and if everything fell his way, but I would say seven, definitely 6-7 guys could win the title. But Zane Smith's proved a lot to me. He ran well in Xfinity last year when he had the chances with Junior Motorsports, and he's won at Dover and Michigan this year, which are two. Dover, the Monster Mile, it's a tough track. He dominated there. I think Smith gets the championship.
I'm going with Enfinger. I think it's he's been so close, and he's had runs, and he started off the year so hot.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like they're getting that momentum back now. And that's why I've harped on the momentum thing with this all night. And I'm going to stick with it. I think Enfinger's going to rattle off 2 or 3 wins here, and he's going to end it up with the championship.
So that's like the tale of two tapes. So you got an experienced veteran, and then you got the rookie for our selections. And
which, when it all comes down, Christian Eckes will probably win the championship.
As a rookie.
Neither of us may have going anywhere.
Also as a rookie. But yeah, I think this is the most wide open, as I said, playoffs out of the three. And obviously, like I said, we'll break down Xfinity next week. We'll preview that. But
And I also just say don't sleep on Crafton.
Oh, yeah.
Because I mean, you know how that dude is.
If people did that last year.
and he's again, they've had a crap ton of bad luck. And it seems like it's finally starting to go away. And he could very easily go on a run here and blow this thing out of the water.
And it also seems like they have more speed than last year, last couple of years, Thor Sport as a whole. Crafton has a win. He snapped that winless streak at Kansas. We talked to him on the podcast that following week. Yeah, I mean, if you sleep on Crafton in the Truck Series, a Truck Series lifer, yeah, I would say you're crazy. So, yeah, I think it's possible that he wins. I think he's been a part of the championship for, I believe, every year that they've had it. So, he'll be disappointed if he doesn't win, and we'll get Matt Crafton 88 radio chatter, which is also audio gold, similar to Johnny Sauter. Just two Truck Series lifers and veterans who are entertaining as hell. I highly suggest to listen to them on the radio. But we got Smith and Enfinger going to the championship, or winning the championship. Neff, any final thoughts before we get out of here and talk to Tyler Ankrum?
Are we going to do predictions?
We do got to do predictions. We just predicted a whole playoff, so I kind of forgot about the races this weekend.
Yeah, but we didn't do races.
For sure. So we have a triple header this weekend at Bristol Motor Speedway. If you couldn't tell earlier, I'm very excited for this weekend of racing. Probably, Neff, I don't know about you, but I think Bristol's my favorite track to watch a race at.
Richmond was number one for a long time of the tracks that we go to in the Cup Series.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kind of soured on it and I switched over to Darlington. Still love watching races at Darlington, but I think I'm back on the Richmond bandwagon, but Bristol's top five for sure. And obviously Indy is, mm-hmm, because of my just allegiance to Indy, is up in there. But Bristol, I love Bristol just from the pure the racing there since they changed the track. And I know so many people hate the fact that they changed the track, but I love it because guys get so many options. And I hate the sticky stuff, PJ1, whatever the hell you want to call it, but Bristol is the one track that I've actually enjoyed how that plays out because of the fact that it wears out so much because they go into it early and it wears out. So by the end of the race, you're covering the whole track instead of, you know, avoiding that lane early or only being that lane all night. It widens out and you end up having guys racing all over the place and you get guys that run different lanes. As I mentioned before, Logano runs a unique line there where he diamonds the corner more than most anybody else. And it really works for him in passing guys because he gets really big runs downhill coming off the corners. And if he's got that car right where he can do that, he will be a force this weekend. So, yeah, I'm with you. It's top five for sure, maybe top three because of just – and, again, short track. That's my Twitter handle is MNF Short Track for a reason.
Absolutely. There's just so much action there. And you can see it no matter where you are on the track or in the stands, I should say. You can see everything on the track. So
The only thing – that's the one track – of all racetracks that I have ever been to for circle track racing that I regretted the first time I went not having hearing protection.
Oh my God.
My hearing shot anyway, but the first time I was in the infield at Bristol, I'd been in the stands before, but I'd never been in the infield. And the first time I was in the infield, my ears literally hurt for almost 3 weeks after the race. It was brutal, and I've never gone back without hearing protection since.
Yeah, so luckily my first two experiences, I've only been there twice, but wasn't that bad. But I did watch if you're outside for a few laps, especially in the infield, and you're watching practice, even just practice, or race, obviously, or qualifying or whatever, you bring ear protection because I made that mistake, and your ears are ringing, and you can't hear, like you can't think. So yeah, if you're going to the race this weekend, we got 30,000 fans there. Bring your protection. But Neff, that aside, let's get into our predictions. We got three races. Start with the trucks on Thursday night, the playoff opener. I guess I'll go first. I'm gonna go with Brett Moffitt to get it done and kick the playoffs with a bang. Get his first one of the season.
I am gonna take Sheldon Creed. I like what he does at short tracks, and I think that just what I've seen of him in the ARCA world and what have you, at places like Salem and Winchester and tracks like that in the Midwest or high bank short tracks, he's really good there. And I'm gonna hitch the wagon to Sheldon Creed.
10-4 to that. We got GMS across the board. We got the Xfinity race on Friday night. I'll give you the first pick. I think I know who you're going with, but we'll see.
Yeah. He's on a roll. We're going back to Allgaier, man. Dude is, I'm telling you, he is going to crush their spirits going into these playoffs, man. So I'm going with Allgaier to get three in a row.
So I also think Allgaier is going to win. I'll make another prediction, but I'll give you a little bit of perspective here on how good Allgaier is at Bristol. he's very good. The last three races alone, he's led at least 131 laps in the last three races. However, he's only got one win there. And it was back in 2010, his second year in the series. Since then, he's led 609 laps. So, yes, he's very good at Bristol. Since you went with him, I'll go Chase Briscoe. I kind of harped on it earlier. Hasn't shown the speed, blah, blah, blah. He could have won this race last year. I think he gets back to victory lane and gets his seventh win of the year. And we only got eight races left. He's got to win at least two more to meet his goal at the beginning of the year of eight races.
Right.
So I got Chase Briscoe. Although, I think you got the good pick here. We'll go to the Cup race. The round of 16 comes to a close this weekend. We'll see who makes the round of 12. Who you got getting to victory lane on Saturday evening?
Wait, which Bush brother are you taking? I'm going to take Kyle. I said it when I made my predictions for the playoffs, and I'm sticking to it. I'm already 0-1 on my Kyle predictions. I said he was going to win Richmond and Bristol, and he was terrible at Richmond. But it's Bristol, baby, and he is the man at Bristol in the Cup Series and any series. So
yeah,
I'm going with Kyle.
That's obviously a good pick, and usually I would go with the other Bush brother because he's got six wins there, Kurt. But I'm going to go Chase Elliott. a little bit, not on a limb, but he's, you know, he ran well there in the spring, won the All-Star race, really dominated the All-Star race. Disappointing All-Star race, if we're going to be honest. But I think Chase Elliott gets the win and gets his, what, fourth win of the year and moves on to the round of 12. And we talked about what we think is going to happen as far as the playoffs, you know, probably stay chalk across the board. But, yeah, I'm pumped for this weekend, Neff.
It's going to be a great one. Can't wait. I'm with you. The Last Great Coliseum is a great moniker for that place. I love seeing the racing there. And I hope we... I hope we see some fun. That's all I can say.
Yeah, beating and banging. Absolutely. But we got a fun conversation coming up with Tyler Ankrum. So let's get to that conversation with Tyler Ankrum. All right, Tyler, this season you've got 3 top 5, 7 top 10 finishes through the 16-race regular season. Overall, how would you gauge the season so far, your first with GMS Racing?
Well, so far it's been pretty average. I'm kind of honestly a little stuck of how I should try to gauge the performance of our season with how things have been going with the Corona, no practice and qualifying. It's been relatively tough for us. We've had a lot of bad luck and we've run into a lot of rough patches. So, we had fifth place finish at Richmond to finish the regular season. So I'm hoping that with the racetracks coming up, we've had some pretty strong runs at, Kansas, Texas, Bristol. I was faster last year, and GMS was super faster last year, and also Vegas. So I'm hoping all these racetracks that we're coming up to will play into our favor.
Now, Tyler, I know that you're relatively new to the series, and going into playoffs is something that you're really accustomed to, although you did do it last year as well. For this year, do you feel like you've got the momentum that you need, even though you haven't secured a victory this year?
Honestly, I don't know. We've been working really hard at GMS, and it's been a constant uphill battle trying to find the feel in the truck that I've been looking for. This past weekend we had brake issues, and last week at Darlington spun myself up, or two weekends ago we spun myself out, and to be honest, is I don't know if we necessarily have the momentum, but we definitely have the mindset to go out there and get the job done. I don't really think that confidence has much to do with all of this as much as it does as the with wherewithal and the want to go out and win and make progress in the playoffs.
Now, as Neff said, you made the playoffs last year via the win at Kentucky with DGR. I'm curious, what's been the biggest adjustment for you moving over to GMS this year?
Well, for one, it's just, being the chassis and the bodies. DGR last year was a KBM chassis and, a Toyota body, and now we have a GMS chassis and a Chevrolet body. So aerodynamically, they drive completely different. And, even handling, they drive completely different. The trucks like different things, and, you can't really do the things that you did with the GMS truck that you couldn't necessarily do with the DGR truck. So it's definitely been, quite of a swing for me. But, I got a lot of great people around me helping me out.
I am curious, you talk about aerodynamically handling differently. I've never really heard somebody say that before. So when you're in a Chevy versus a Toyota, does it end up generating different loads on the tires or cause you to have a different feel right side to left side weight?
Oh, it's not necessarily really with, the loads of the tires and left or right side weight. Typically, you'll see that just with overall geometry and setup. But, realistically speaking, with the GMS body and the Chevrolet nose and body, it's a lot more boxier, it's a lot more square, so the Chevrolet, the nose punches a way bigger hole in the air, which makes it really easy for trucks to suck up onto you and get really big runs down straightaways. That compared to the Toyota's a lot more rounder, shaped like a bullet in a sense, and so are the Ford. So it makes it pretty hard trying to get a run on someone with all the dirty air, but they make it, it's really easy for them to run up on you. So you're constantly playing offense and defense all at the same time with this kind of body that I'm used to. And You know, we work really closely with Chevy to make the body better week in, week out. And I'm actually, you know, I'm really happy where I'm at. And, you know, my team, you know, GMS is awesome. They have all the tools and all the supplies that you need to go racing. And it's a great facility over there.
That's interesting. Now, Tyler, moving on to the playoff talk, you're not even old enough to gamble in many casinos, but because of that, do you kind of think you're playing with house money, nothing to lose going into the playoffs as the 9 seed?
A little bit, but not really, though. We're not too far out. I want to send like only 3 points out of the cut line. So right. Really the biggest thing is to, which I'm pretty sure everyone has the same mindset as myself, my team, is, you know, you can't rely on Talladega to make it into the next round of, or the next round of eight. You know, Talladega pretty much runs itself. There's no such thing as a strategy there. So, you know, when you get out of Bristol, you got to make sure you have a really strong run or a win. And then you got to do the same thing in Las Vegas. And I think intermediates have been GMS's strong suit here throughout the year. And I think we can go out there at Bristol, considering how fast GMS was last year. And even Las Vegas, how fast we were there in the spring. I think, you know, it's not too far to say that we can't go out there and hopefully secure ourselves.
Looking at your strategy going to these playoffs, you mentioned you're only 3 points out, and in reality, top to bottom in the trucks is only 20-some points apart. I mean, everybody's pretty much on top of each other. Do you have to run a little more conservative in situations where you're not going for the win, just because of the fact that one bad race could really put you far behind?
Yes and no, but you got to make sure you manage that. What you really got to make sure is when you get into the playoffs is that you're not bullied around, especially to the non-playoff drivers, because at this point in time in the season, they don't care about points. All they're going to go, all they care about is, you know, the wins. They're not going to necessarily worry about, you know, when to pit at the end of the stage or take the points or not to take the points. They're going to just take track position to try and win. So yeah, it's going to be a lot more difficult coming up here soon. So I think you have to be a little bit more conservative, maybe methodical when it comes to your driving. You got to add a lot of weight to your decision making skills, and but you can't just get bullied around. That's probably the biggest thing, is you got to take everything that the track and your competitors and your own truck will give you.
And Tyler, this year, it seems like and this was the talk on the playoff day on Monday, that the truck series is wide open. It's stacked this year with talent and competition. I believe there's probably 7-8 drivers, including yourself, that could realistically win the championship. How tough do you feel like this postseason could be compared to last?
I think it's going to be very difficult. I think a lot of last postseason, you saw a lot of engine failures, a lot of mechanical mm-hmm. failures, and you know, people relatively just getting lucky. And it doesn't seem like you have that this year. Everyone's pretty much running on top of each other week in, week out. On really, this is just amount of running up front, staying up front, and also finishing there. That's where I really feel like that. You know, we have in the 2016 where we've, you know, gotten off here lately is just, you know, running into bad luck, catching cautions at wrong times, and or even choosing the, you know, the wrong lane on a restart. Like Gateway, I was sixth, and I was right behind Brett Moffitt, and I picked the top, and Sam Mayer spun his tires, and we went from 6th to 13th or 12th or whatever it was, and you know, and Brett finished second. So, you know, you Monday morning quarterback it, and you go, well, shoot, if I would have just picked the bottom, I probably would have been, you know, 3rd or 4th. And so, and I can't overlook those kinds of situations and say that I've had a terrible season, because I haven't. I just haven't had a dominant season, which I've wanted. And I could probably thank Corona for that, and the lack of practice and qualifying and the ability to tune on our truck the way you want it to. But, you know, you can't use that as a crutch, because, you know, at the end of the day, we're all in the same boat here.
Right on. Now, you talked about being at GMS and having all the tools. When it comes down to playoff time, obviously you're running for yourself to try to win for your team, but as an organization, how much are you guys working with each other to try to get all of you to the front of the pack to make it to the Final Four?
It's funny you mention that, because we talked about it today, trying to implement a strategy which I won't talk about because we do have our trade secrets. But we are the conversation is starting of all of us working together to make sure we all are up front running together, and just trying to find the strategies for to make sure that we all make it deep into the playoffs, because I'm sure I know it's never been done of having all four cars of one single organization in the final four at Phoenix. Or it's never happened ever in the playoffs. So if that could happen, that'd be a really great day for GMS, the entire organization, and Chevrolet.
Yeah, Gibbs took up 75% last year in Cup, but if you got 40% of the trucks in the playoffs, 4 out of 10. So if you can get 100% in the championship race, that would be quite impressive, Tyler. You mentioned on Playoff Media Day as well that you feel like you're the biggest dark horse when you were asked that. So kind of curious, following up on that, why do you feel that way? Is it because you haven't had maybe the season you were looking for?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the way we've been running and the way we've been finishing haven't spoken of how fast we actually are. Dover, for the good part of the race, I was running top 5, top 10, was even running third for a good bit. And, we had a bad pit road call and ended up falling back to, 13th, 14th, 15th, and, was able to make my way back up just to 7th. And racing in dirty air is really rough, but the way we have been running and been finishing have been two different things. So we go out there and we can just finish these races and stay inside the top 5, and because it's all that much more important now to finish up front, because that means you're going to start up front.
Mm-hmm.
With the way the new qualifying format is, clean air is king, and with the way racing is right now, it's once you're up there, you pretty much don't leave unless something happens on pit road. So I think we are, because you can definitely expect people to underestimate us, and I feel like that was our strong suit last year at DGRs. It's the first year David had a full-time truck team, and we made it all the way to the round. We made it all the way to the round of 6, and had a mechanical failure at Phoenix before Homestead, which kept us going from the round 4. So there's nothing to say that we can't make it in, because we kind of proved everyone wrong last year with how far that we made it, and we can do it again.
I like your mindset, brother. So I got to get into your mind for a second here. You mentioned no practice, no qualifying. It's been a challenge for you. I'm watching the truck race from Darlington. You've never been to the racetrack. You've never turned a lap there in an actual vehicle. They wave the green flag. You go to turn 1 and go to the apron 3 wide. What the heck were you thinking?
Well, I kind of knew everyone when we were going there, just from the amount of people I had talked to, everyone was going to be like, all right, we're going to take it easy the first couple of laps, we're going to figure it out. And once we all have it figured out, then we're going to go racing. Well, it kind of throw a little reverse psychology on you to take advantage of everyone's cautiousness. And, at the start of that race, I picked off 3 or 4 trucks. And
and you made it out of turn 2. That was the part that was amazing.
Yeah. And I made it out of turn 2, and I got a lot of valuable stage points that day. I probably would have walked out with 30 stage points that day if I hadn't spun out underneath my teammate, which, I was a little excited, so that was my own driver error. But with all that said and done, I think with moves like that and just trying to outthink your competition, you can definitely go out there and take advantage of people.
So we got a couple more for you, Tyler. You look at the playoffs, and all 10 teams are separated by 24 points. So from the outside looking in, it doesn't look like, it doesn't appear to be too many favorites. You could say Zane maybe because he has a few wins. Same with Sheldon and Enfinger. And Hill has the consistency. But do you think there's a real favorite for the championship this year?
I don't think so. Last year, Brett had pretty much, dominated the playoffs. So when it came Homestead time, everyone expected him to win it. And, Austin Hill was super fast as well. So It kind of seemed like it was, Austin Hill and Brett Moffitt and kind of everyone else was in, you know, in the four rounds just trying to battle it out. I could even say that Ross Chastain was another favorite because he had a lot of really strong runs in the truck season last year. But with the way everyone's been running, it's, you know, it's been hit or miss, you know. Even my teammate Sheldon, you know, he's had a few really strong runs, and he's had, you know, three victories now, I think. Three, mm-hmm. Right?
Yes, three.
Yeah, three victories. But, you know, he's even had, you know, in between all those victories, you know, he still had some, you know, poor finishes, you know, regardless of, you know, the bad luck or getting caught up in somebody else's mess. In a sense, you got to go out there and create your own luck. And there's a many different things you can do in order to do that. So I think going forward, it's just, you know, about the consistency. And, you know, regardless of if you win the hearts and minds of the people, if you go out and win, you're gonna do that regardless.
Neff, you got a final question?
Dive bomb moves like that. You keep making dive bomb moves like that one at Darlington, you'll win the hearts and minds of everybody, because that was amazing. One last question for you. First time I ever remember seeing you driving a vehicle was at Nashville in a super late model for Kyle Beattie, if I remember correctly. But I know I've seen you at a lot of different local short tracks. In your developmental years and your moves up the ladder, what do you think is the thing that you have utilized the most now that you're at the national touring level that you learned at the local level?
Honestly, it's just the mechanics of these race cars. That was a really big thing of mine when I got into stock cars. Is, you know, I come from quarter midgets and midgets, so I knew absolutely nothing about these cars. And you know, my father started a race team, and you know, I wanted obviously to make my own family proud, so I was in the shop as much as I could. You know, going to high school and having school and all that. So when, especially, my learning curve really picked up a lot, especially when Blake Bainbridge and Clay Rogers came on board, and they started crew chiefing and car driver mentoring me. They really helped a lot when it came to learning the race cars and, you know, the springs, the shocks, the sway bars, name it. I don't feel like there isn't anything on a race car that I don't know of anymore. You know, Mark Martin was always one of my heroes growing up, probably one of the biggest ones in my mind. And, you know, that's the way he did it. So I always thought, okay, well, that's the way I have to do it too. And so, you know, learning and shortening my learning curve when it comes to these bigger cars, especially on the national tour, you know, for me, when I got in a truck and last year, I knew nothing about driving them. So I just threw myself into learning the truck and the mechanics of it because I knew that was the one thing I could control, even though everyone else had experience over me. And that's really, really helped me, you know, help shorten the learning curve on the mechanics of these trucks and, you know, help me just push forward and learn more.
10-4 to that. Cool. Tyler, I'll get you out here on this one. It's one last playoff question. Second playoffs, obviously second go around by making on points this year. What would you consider, obviously you want to win the championship, but what would you consider a successful playoff in 2020?
If we could go out and get a win or two in advance in the round of playoffs, I'd be happy. And if we made it to the final four, I would be ecstatic. To be in the final four would be such a huge honor for me because, you know, that just tells you that those are the best four trucks of the entire year. And even if we didn't get the championship, they would know that we were there and we were competitive. But, you know, for me, I think we're going to have to win to get there. And, you know, we're behind, so we can start catching up right now. And I think what happens here in the first round will kind of determine what's going to happen for the rest of the round. So I'm not saying it's going to get any more crazier than what it already is. I think going forward that we can do it. We just got to all believe in each other. You know, as much as we already do, we have to believe in each other more. And I don't think that there's anything stopping us.
Well, cool, man. We really appreciate your time. Good luck at Bristol on Thursday and in the playoffs as well.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate this a lot.
All right, y'all. There you have it. Fun conversation there with Tyler Ankrum, who I believe, as he mentioned, is a real dark horse for this truck championship this year, beginning this weekend at Bristol. I think he definitely wanted more this year in his first season with GMS, but He's in the playoffs. Anything can obviously happen, as we saw last year with Matt Crafton not winning a race, yet winning the championship. And especially how close these 10 drivers are going into the playoffs, separated by just 24 points. Also, great conversation there with Neff on Richmond. As you heard, we both really enjoyed the races at Richmond, you know, between trucks, the two Xfinity and the Cup. It was real racing, no manufactured cautions, with the exception of the stage breaks and the competition cautions, which don't even get me started on the Xfinity Series competition caution on Saturday. Absolutely no need for it, but I feel like we've talked about that ad nauseum on here. One quick note, we recorded the body of the podcast prior to a few announcements on Tuesday, one being that Daniel Suarez and Gaunt Brother Racing will go their separate ways at the end of the year. I talked to Daniel last week. We posted an article on it Monday. You can check out frontstretch.com. That kind of details the frustration and some of the stuff he's had to overcome this year being running for a smaller team in Gaunt Brother. So definitely check that out. Sam Mayer will also run part-time in Xfinity next year for Junior Motorsports with the idea of going full-time in 2022. And also Camping World is back as the title sponsor of the Truck Series beginning next year. Busy week and a fun weekend ahead of racing at Bristol. I love that track as we detail in the podcast. But that's it for this week's show. We'll be back next week to review Bristol and who advances to the round of 12. We'll also preview the Xfinity Series playoffs as they begin next week at Las Vegas. But until then, we out.